This is the Friday, May 18, 2018 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us now, Walt Hackney, Elaine Cubb. You too, welcome back.
Thank you.
You know, we had a podcast we did, gosh, it's probably been a year ago, where we've asked questions. I let Elaine ask questions of you.
Right.
So maybe I'll let you do that here in a little bit, Walter. So just hang 10. I need to ask Elaine first, though, about cotton. Your old home area of Oklahoma and cotton. Bulls on there too. What's going on?
Rocking and rolling. You know, that is a hot market. It has been hot for months, you know, off and on, and it's off and running again, breaking new highs. People talk of 90 cents. Could happen, I guess. But again, I think about this cotton bull run the same way I think about crude oil and the same way I think about the prospects for the entire commodity sector, with the exception of livestock, which is not moving in the same direction right now. But it's probably going to get too fast. I believe it might be getting overheated too fast. There are good fundamental reasons, demand-driven reasons about the global economy, you know, getting better, perhaps some inflationary pressures or ideas coming into the U.S. economy, but not this fast. So I think there's really a potential for a pullback in cotton and in crude oil and in all of the commodities here within the next 6 weeks, let's say, before it can then proceed on a more orderly upward demand-driven trend.
I cut you off talking about crude oil at the end of the broadcast, and you had started to say Iran, that maybe has settled out. But there's a big Asia demand story. Rig counts today stayed on the sixth, continued steady after six straight gains on rig counts. We are producing a lot of oil in the United States and continue to do so.
Yeah, those permits in Texas are growing, like you mentioned, yes.
Does that have any implications on a global scale and keeping this thing from going to 80?
I don't think we're going to have that. We're not going to, in my opinion, I don't think that we're going to reach that test before it pulls back. But yeah, the longer term story is a demand driven story, that there is enough global demand or global recovery continued. I don't believe that the expansionary parts of the economy are over yet. I don't believe we've peaked. So I think these things continue to grow. But in the shorter term or the midterm, there's probably going to be some volatility.
Speaking of growing, Walter, are there cattle feedlots? You mentioned one during the broadcast that was buying on Thursday. Do you think that sentiment will gain acceptance going in the next 5 days?
When you infer buying...
Somebody restocking a lot. Let's fill some lots back up because we just sold because we can't lose another $6 a week.
Well, the drop in the feeder cattle, as we're referring here to the cash market or the MERC, the drop in that did not have any reference to the volume or availability of feeder cattle. There's been and is an excellent demand for feeder cattle immediate delivery as we speak because of one simple thing, and that's the liquidation of the normal run of cattle on feed coming out of the feedlot and being replaced. And those cattle feeders cannot afford to let a pen sit empty out here in the feedlot if they have the availability offered to them. And they have been offered, and they're buying them. And the money, we've seen an appreciation. What makes this thing so phony, if you will, that has taken place in the last hours in our cash markets, what makes it that way is you look back 2 weeks ago, and we take a steer calf weighing 7 in the Iowa auction system, choice, local, one iron calf. That 700-pounder weaned and ready to go to the feedlot. He was bringing $1.60 to $1.61, $2, $3, $4, and who was buying them? It wasn't necessarily the Iowa cattle feeder or the Illinois or the farmer feeder. It was, in fact, the commercial feedlots that were buying the mass majority of them and driving that market up like this. And we appreciated the cash market on feeder cattle about 2 weeks ago we appreciated that market somewhere around $10 a hundred. Now, for it to roll over in the cash market on fat cattle in a matter of 4 days is really what we're talking about, a marketing period during the week, mm-hmm. is uncalled for. It wasn't there, it wasn't necessary, it was can do, and they did it.
Can do, and they did it. I like that. All right, we'll get some questions here from those of you that have submitted via Twitter at Market to Market. We always have great chatter there. We had some earlier this week, and we'll start with one of our regulars, and that's Phil in Dresden, Ontario, Canada. And Elaine, he's asking, last year, December corn topped out in early July, the year before on June 18. Will it be in the same calendar range this year?
Well, and I kind of touched on that during the main show, is that that is certainly the time of year when the crop has the most risk, when the buyers freak out a little bit, perhaps, or you could pull up a speculative story and get some speculative money in there. And that very well may happen again this summer. I believe that we could have another summer high. But as I mentioned, I don't think that, you know, we're pretty high already. We're above $4. Yeah. And we've got opportunities for $4 cash if you managed your basis correctly in certain areas of the Corn Belt. So I don't know how much higher you want it to get before you worry about getting in that hedging. Now, there was a really good survey that the University of Illinois released this week about how many farmers actually have been doing their hedging. As of April 1st, something like 16% had done no pre-harvest hedging. And going into July 1st, there's many of them that don't intend to have anything. Now, I mean, driving around the Corn Belt, there's not really that many problems. Looking at the long-term forecast, there's not too many problems for feed grains. So by July 1st, I think you are going to want to have something booked, because like I mentioned on the show, I feel fairly confident that prices will be lower by harvest.
Well, last week, Tom Fitzemeyer sat where you were, Elaine, and said, basically, fool me once, which was last year, of, oh, yeah, it's a struggle to get the crop in the ground. We haven't been able to do it. We planted three-quarters of that crop like that.
Yes.
I mean, it goes so fast
planting
it gets
stories
done. Now, I will say, on our Facebook page this week, we had a picture, and I just asked, crop check, what do you see? And the stories were very limited, and from I-90... crossed Minnesota, down a little bit in the northern part of Iowa, over to Wisconsin, the Ohio folks saying the same thing. If you are in that belt that has been too wet, what are you telling them right now? Because they're looking at the market not in their favor.
Not in their favor. But you look at the forecast, and it's generally favorable. The longer-term forecast suggests that they will have opportunities to get that plant in. And as you mentioned, it can be planted very fast. I don't believe it's very easy to get bullish about planting stories right now. I don't believe that's what's driving the corn market higher right now at all. I think it's a demand story or an outside market story. I don't think the planting thing really holds water.
All right. Well, another thing that maybe wasn't holding water was the discussion about the farm bill this week. Didn't seem to have much of a market impact on Friday when it failed to pass the House. But Bill in North Dakota is asking via Twitter, will a failure to pass a farm bill this week have any impact on the market?
No,
long-term?
I don't think day-to-day prices in the futures, you know, really are influenced or by that farm bill talk. But farmers' hedging behaviors, going back to that report, you know, if we can't maintain the crop insurance program and the harvest price option of that crop insurance program, that will not encourage farmers to be more disciplined pre-harvest hedgers. So the long-term viability of the industry, the long-term availability of food in this country, that's the goal of the farm bill, right? So I believe it's important that that continues, and it will influence farmer hedging behavior, but not the markets, no.
All right, so this question has two different angles. I'm going to add a second question here from Jim in Whitewater, Wisconsin. You're both are going to answer this one. If NAFTA and the China negotiations fail, where will new crop prices be in July? So I want to ask you more about trade. Let's have a little trade discussion with this question.
Let's not even think about it. I feel that the indications this week were that something, than the China thing anyway, is that we seem to be coming to an agreement that it's not a great idea. It's a lose-lose scenario if we punish them and they punish us. So I feel like the hints were that that trade will get sorted out.
Do you think that the question then is, it's kind of like the markets of, oh, we're not going to get the crop planted. It's that same thing. Don't come at us until there's news. The market's going to be done responding to threats.
Yeah, I think there's potential for the soybean market to put back on the 50 cents that it lost since this China threat started looming. But I don't think, I don't think that it's necessarily something that's going to, you know, drive things on Monday necessarily.
Okay. Well, you talked about the hog market a little bit coming out of this trade. That's really the biggest thing, more than beef, do you feel, in NAFTA and in China discussions?
Yes, I do.
Do you think that there is hope for, there's still going to be a demand, let's say that, for U.S. pork globally if a trade deal, if we have all this pork and it becomes cheap because we haven't been able to sell it to China or wherever? I mean, do you think that there is a, you know, what are these trade talks going to do to the hog market?
We've had an excellent reception domestically to an huge supply of pork going into the consumer base from the retail without being worried too much in regard to exporting. And it has held its value in great shape as far as the packer and the retailer are concerned. They have made a lot of money in regard to the product sales as compared to what they gave for it at the packer level. The packer himself has made a lot of money on the pork. One of the high-end profit pictures in the packing industry has been pork versus beef and versus poultry. The packer, you take the diversified packer like one or two or three of our major packers we have now, their big item profit picture this last fiscal was pork, and it's continued to be extremely high, meaning one thing: our pork exporting did not drive that market. It was our domestic market and the value placed on that product by the consumer. And that's where we are right now. We're at a position, granted, we may and we may not, we may have excess pork coming at us in regard to product as we get into the third quarter of this year. But the fact remains, I'm not one to subscribe to a wall, if you will, of pork coming at us. I don't think we will, Paul.
Which one tastes better, a wall of pork or a wall of beef?
You know, I think it depends on how you break through the wall.
All right. I appreciate it, Walt Hackney. Thank you, as always, for making a stop to come see us and instill your wisdom. Thank you so much. That's Walt Hackney. And Elaine Cupps, same as you. As always, good to have that chat. And I liked in the tease that we saw on Facebook, there was a really neat book. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, highly recommend it.
That's a good one. All right, Elaine Cupps, thank you so very much. That will do it for Market Plus. And next week, we'll be back here as we explore how businesses in Louisiana are helping shore up the Gulf Coast. So again, next week, it'll be Sue Martin sitting here at the Market to Market table. So until then, thanks for watching, listening, or reading. I'm Paul Yeager. Have a great week.